This is North Carolina Report, a public affairs presentation of the North Carolina News Network. I'm Bruce Farrell, thanking you for being with us. On this edition of the program, we're going to talk about outdoor drama. This is the time of year when a number of outdoor drama performances are taking place all around the state of North Carolina. North Carolina has a relatively high number of those activities, all the way from Onto These Hills in Cherokee out to the Lost Colony in Manio, and a lot of stops in between. Scott Parker is with us. He is with the Institute of Outdoor Drama at UNC Chapel Hill, which helps study this very unique art form. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that go into making this a unique part of something to do here in North Carolina. Outdoor drama is our topic. Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama, our guest on this edition of North Carolina Report. You have an invitation to stay with us. Well, Scott, welcome to the program. Let's start with something simple. What do we mean when we're talking about outdoor drama?
Thank you, Bruce. It's a pleasure to be here. The outdoor historical drama got started in North Carolina with Paul Green's production of The Lost Colony down in Manteo on Roanoke Island in 1937. And it really sort of functions as the granddaddy of all the outdoor historical dramas around the country. And what makes them unique, really what defines them, is that these are plays that dramatize significant events that occurred in the life of a community. But the real secret to it is that they're produced right on the site where the events occurred. So it's not like producing Hello Dolly outdoors. These are very site-specific plays.
Well, talk to me a little bit about how the art form has developed. The Lost Colony is a good place for us to jump off because it was one of the earlier versions of this art form. How has it evolved over the years? Obviously, a lot of folks saw The Lost Colony and said, hey, this is a great concept. We have historical events in our own community that we would like to illustrate in some way theatrically. Talk to me about, at least in North Carolina's case, how this has developed over the years.
Well, The Lost Colony itself was, when it opened in 1937, it was only supposed to run one summer. No one knew that it would run beyond that. It was just to be a celebration of the 350th anniversary of the birth of Virginia Dare, who was the first English child born in North America. But it was such a tremendous success. It drew so many people, and it received a good deal of attention from President Roosevelt at the time, who had made this part of his New Deal program to bring the country back out of the Depression. It turned out to be a great tourist attraction, and people came from all over the country to see the show, and Roosevelt himself came, and it was a great shot in the arm to the Outer Banks for all these people coming to town. And so over a period of time, and then of course they did it the next year, and then they did it the next year, and so on. It's been playing ever since, except for the 4 years during the Second World War when the Outer Banks had to be blacked out because of U-boat activity up and down the coast. But it's been playing ever since, and other communities around the state and indeed around the nation saw what was happening down there on Roanoke Island, and they came to Paul Green and the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill and asked them for advice on how to do the same thing in their communities, and it just picked up steam, and the movement spread, and it's spread from the east to the west all over the country. It's sort of like dropping a pebble in the water, and you see these concentric rings spread out all across the country.
So basically, The Lost Colony is one of, if not the birthplace, if you will, for this concept, or at least in this country.
It is. And not only Lost Colony, but in fact, the state of North Carolina is really considered to be the taproot of the outdoor historical drama movement.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Institute, and then we'll back up and talk a little bit more about the outdoor dramas that North Carolina offers. Tell me a little bit about the Institute. What does your Institute, what role does your Institute play in the continuation and the perpetuation of this art form?
Well, the Institute of Outdoor Drama at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill is a public service agency of the university, and its primary function is to nurture, to support the outdoor drama movement in North Carolina. And we do that in a variety of ways. We do an awful lot of advising for these theaters. We help the boards of directors get formed. We help the theaters practice good management, good board structure. We help them, we advise them on how to raise money, on playwriting, on marketing. We have an annual audition in Chapel Hill every year so that all the theaters come to Chapel Hill looking for performers, technicians and dancers and singers and actors, designers. We have an annual conference. We sponsor a number of workshops to help these managers and board members learn how to do a good job of producing outdoor dramas. So it's a nurturing function.
And I would guess that and maybe I can split this into two areas. One is how these dramas are very similar to other arts activities, and then secondly, we'll talk maybe about how they're different. But what it sounds like you're saying is just like, say, community theaters or other arts activities in the community, there has to be a certain amount of management in place to make sure, for lack of a better way to describe this, that the trains run on time and everything runs like it's supposed to.
That's right. And in fact, they are run like a business, and most of these are not community theaters, but are professional theaters. Everyone is paid, for the most part, from parking attendants to ushers to everyone on stage, everybody backstage, the management. They're, for the most part, they are professional theaters. Some theaters actually will hire union actors from Actors Equity Association, performers, and others will hire professional actors who are not members of the union, and a great many of the theaters will hire college students and college professors during the summer. But everybody is paid, and it runs on a professional theater standard. The discipline is very high. My predecessor at the Institute of Outdoor Drama, a man named Mark Sumner, refers to the outdoor drama as the crossover spot. And by that he means it is the place between excellent amateur theater and top quality professional theater. It's right in the middle. And it's a wonderful place for newcomers to learn how the professional theater works. And these shows will run 68 to 70 performances during the summer, six nights a week. And that calls for a good deal of discipline and how to maintain a role over that long a period of time. So it's a true professional theater environment.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Of course, most folks are aware that Andy Griffith cut his teeth, so to speak, on The Lost Colony, playing several roles early in his career. And Terrence Mann, who now is directing The Lost Colony, if I'm correct in saying that, also cut his teeth on The Lost Colony and went on to a number of stage performances. Maybe some other folks whose names don't come to mind. But I guess the point being that this is a good opportunity for local folks or visitors to North Carolina to see top quality theater talent, and maybe even folks who will be making the stage in Broadway or elsewhere down the road.
Oh, there have been a large number of well-known performers who have gotten their start in outdoor drama, and you have in fact mentioned a number of North Carolinians who got their start there and who have come back, and they are now helping those outdoor dramas and helping those youngsters enter into the business. Certainly, Andy Griffith has been very supportive of The Lost Colony for many, many years. And as you say, Terrence Mann has come back. This is now his second summer in directing The Lost Colony. There is a three-time Tony Award-winning costume designer from North Carolina, William Ivy Long, who has been designing the costumes and the scenery for The Lost Colony now for about, 15 years. He comes back to The Lost Colony every summer and designs the show and nurtures these youngsters coming up in the business. Last year, William Ivy Long had 8 of his plays on Broadway at one time. He's quite a success story.
Interesting you mentioned that. We're visiting with Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama here in North Carolina. We talked a little bit about how managing these dramas are similar to other things, but obviously you're outdoors, you're dealing with the elements, you're dealing with a lot of other things. How is running an outdoor drama, just the actual nuts and bolts of it, different than, say, a more controlled environment such as an indoor theater?
Well, of course, the main difference is the scale of the production itself. These are large, epic productions that dramatize significant events in our heritage in the state and the nation. And so the stages are quite big. They'll be 80 to 100 feet across, maybe 40 feet deep. And so I often explain it by comparing the outdoor drama with painting. If you think of indoor theater as easel painting with small brushes on a canvas, compared to outdoor historical drama, which is a mural painting with large brushes and large grand strokes on an expansive space. Everything in outdoor drama is bigger. It's much grander. It's epic in its scale, and it's very difficult to do. In fact, it's much harder to do these shows in such a big way, much harder to do than it is plays on a smaller scale indoors.
And obviously, you mentioned some of the challenges, but obviously this is also, as you've mentioned, talking about the actors, but I'm sure the technicians and all the other folks who also are involved in these projects and these performances, this is a good training ground, baptism under fire for them as well.
It surely is. And as I say, there are a great number of college students that vie for these roles and these positions in outdoor dramas. The theaters will go on an audition tour early in the spring. Actually, some of them start in February, and they'll have local auditions on the theater site, and they will hire some local folks, but they will also travel around the Southeast, and some of them travel around the country, and go to large combined auditions where they will see as many as 800 performers in a three-day period of time. And the competition is quite stiff to hire these people. And, of course, they want to hire the very best people they can get.
And obviously this poses some unique challenges for the actors and actresses themselves who are trying out, in terms of these are very unique roles. And probably later in the program we'll talk more about some of the plays specifically and what kinds of things they cover. But obviously this is a very challenging type of thing for those who seek out these roles and want to participate.
It is, and it can be daunting. The first time you walk out onto one of these large stages and look out on 1,500 to 2,000 seats, and it's a bit scary if you're not used to it. Many of these theaters do not have microphones for the actors, and so the actors have to learn how to project their voices to fill up the theater. And nowadays, our colleges and universities, I'm sorry to say, are not training the actors in this kind of vocal projection. And so a lot of these theaters will have vocal coaches to teach them to project their voices from low in the diaphragm to punch those voices out across the theater.
And obviously, we've talked about it a little bit, but one of the other aspects of this is the elements themselves. Unlike a climate-controlled theater, you're dealing with outdoors, sometimes by the sea, sometimes in the mountains, where you're dealing with the weather conditions as they present themselves.
That's right. And the bane of outdoor drama, of course, is rain. We can play through just about anything except a downpour. And as you and I speak here at the end of June, we wish we could have some rain, and certainly in the Piedmont of North Carolina. But rain can cause a problem. Usually, these outdoor dramas will only have about one or two rainouts per summer. In North Carolina, certainly in the summertime, rain cells will approach a theater, and they'll only last maybe 30 minutes, and then they'll pass on. So the shows can hold a performance for 30 minutes or more, and then they'll go right back into it. So they don't lose very many. Heat usually is not a problem. Wind is usually not a problem. Other than that, maybe every now and again an actor will swallow a moth, but that's about it.
A very interesting and unique form indeed. Well, what we're going to do right now is take our mid-program break. When we come back with Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama at UNC Chapel Hill, we'll talk a little bit more about what North Carolina has to offer. We've talked some about the Lost Colony, which is, I guess, the granddaddy of them all as far as outdoor dramas are concerned. But North Carolina, from all the way to Cherokee in the west to Manio and Swansboro and Wilmington in the east and various stops in between, offers outdoor drama. If you're looking for a unique experience, that might be something you'll want to check out. We'll talk a little bit more about outdoor drama in North Carolina with Scott Parker of the Institute of Outdoor Drama at UNC Chapel Hill when we continue here on North Carolina Report.
Welcome to You Bet Your Nest Egg, the show where we find out what you know about investing. Contestant one.
Hi.
Your first question.
I'm ready.
Okay, here goes. There is insurance protecting you if you lose money in the stock market. True or false?
That's true.
Oh, that is wrong.
Oh.
No insurance exists for stock market losses. Your second question here comes. If you lose money in an investment scam, no problem. There is insurance that covers this. True or false?
True.
Oh, wrong again. Too bad. You're out of here.
Oh.
Here's some good news. One organization does help investors get back their securities investments at bankrupt brokerage firms. Learn more about the Securities Investor Protection Corporation at www.sipc.org.
As we continue here on North Carolina Report, we have as our guest Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama at UNC Chapel Hill. We spent a lot of the first part of the program setting the stage, if you'll pardon the pun, about what outdoor drama is and some of the things that go into it. And what we're going to do in the back half of the program is talk a little bit more specifically about what you can experience here in North Carolina. As the tourism folks like to say, be in the state you're in, or however they say it. But if you are planning to do some travels in North Carolina, one of the things you might want to check out is an outdoor drama in one of our various communities. Well, Scott, kind of just let's go through the waterfront. Let's just start in the west and work our way back to the east because we started with the Lost Colony. Talk to me about some of the dramas that are put on in the western part of the state, and obviously they have a certain historical perspective that they're trying to present.
Well, Bruce, the show that is furthest west in North Carolina is Unto These Hills, written by Kermit Hunter. It opened in 1950, and it's on the federal Cherokee Indian Reservation. It's the eastern band of Cherokee, this is a show that dramatizes the very sad part of our history of the removal of the Cherokee to the western states, primarily out to Oklahoma, and the very famous Trail of Tears. And that show has been running now for 53 years. And on a good year, it is one of the most popular outdoor dramas in the nation. They will play to 100,000 people in 2.5 months. It's quite a popular show.
And you have some others in the western part of the state. Horn in the West comes to mind because it also has a long history in the Boone area.
It does. In fact, Horn in the West just celebrated its 50th anniversary. We have the three oldest outdoor dramas in the nation here in North Carolina, with The Lost Colony, Horn in the West in Boone, and Unto These Hills in Cherokee. And Horn in the West dramatizes events that occurred during the Revolutionary War. And in fact, one of the principal characters in that show is Daniel Boone, and his clashing with the Redcoats, the British during the Revolutionary War, and trying to maintain the independence of the nation. And it's quite a moving story.
And it seems to me that these plays and the ones we've kind of talked about so far, Unto These Hills, Horn in the West, Lost Colony, they portray different segments of our early history. But obviously these not only are they outdoor dramas, I guess they also have some educational components as far as a chance for people to learn more about their past that maybe they might not be as interested in reading in the history books, but they enjoy seeing shown on stage.
They do, and it's a wonderful way to learn about the state's heritage. I've had a number of people say to me they've learned more about the state's history by going to the outdoor dramas than they did by reading textbooks when they were in grade school.
Well, staying in the western part of the state, and I will just mention the Montford Park Players in Asheville as well as Shakespeare's Globe Theater in America, but also wanted to talk with you in Valdez from this day forward. Tell me a little about that.
That's a wonderful show. That's a show that dramatizes events in the life of a religious sect called the Waldensians that originated in France in the 1100s, way back. And they experienced some religious discrimination back in those days, and in fact were forced out of the country. And they moved all the way to North Carolina, to Valdez, to the Valdez area in 1893, and set up their own shop there. And they live there to this day. And this is a drama that shows us what happened during that migration and the problems that they had in setting up their colony in Valdez, almost up to modern times. It's quite a moving story.
We're talking with Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama about the various outdoor dramas in North Carolina. We were talking earlier about some of the ones further in the western part of the state. As we move east, there's several near the South Carolina border, Polkton, Ripple in the River, and the Pembroke Strike at the Wind. Tell me a little bit about those.
Well, Ripple in the River is one of the smaller outdoor dramas, and it dramatizes events about the turn of the century, about the people who live in a town that no longer exists. It's a little town that was called Sneedsboro, North Carolina. The town was located right along a canal that was built as an extension of the P.D. River that runs from North Carolina into South Carolina, and they tried to develop a canal that would run all the way from that community to the coast of North Carolina so that it would be a canal of commerce to bring goods and services to that part of the state. But the canal failed and never finished it, and the community eventually withered up and died. And so it's a story about that part of our heritage that an awful lot of North Carolinians are unfamiliar with.
And, of course, Strike at the Wind in Pembroke.
Strike of the Wind is about a very famous outlaw there who lived back prior to the Civil War, a man, a Lumbee Indian named Henry Barry Lowry. And he is often referred to as the American Robin Hood, robbing money from the rich and giving it to the poor. And he was eventually captured but escaped and disappeared. And that's a very exciting dramatization of his life.
And we would be remiss if we didn't mention it, although it is on, as they say in the trade, on hiatus this year, and that's Listen and Remember, which seeks to answer the question, is Andrew Jackson from South Carolina or North Carolina? I know they're off this year, but I understand they're going to be coming back in the coming years.
Well, of course, North Carolinians don't think it's a question at all. We're convinced he was a North Carolinian. And yes, they will be back next year. They are renovating and building new facilities there in Waxhaw, North Carolina, and they'll be back next year.
And for those of you who are trying to follow along, that's near Charlotte, I believe, between Charlotte and Monroe, for those of you who are not sure where Waxhaw is. A couple of the others over in the central part of the state, in Snow Camp and Raleigh, tell us a little bit about some of those two performances.
Well, in Snow Camp, North Carolina, which is about halfway between Chapel Hill and Burlington, they actually have two outdoor historical dramas, one of six theaters in the nation that do that. They have two historical dramas that run in rotating repertory, which means that you can go one night and see one play, and then the next night you see another play, which is a wonderful way of learning about that part of the state's history. The first one that opened there about 32 years ago is called The Sword of Peace, written by Mark Sumner. This is a play that takes place during the American Revolutionary War, and it is about the Quakers who lived in this part of the state and their basic tenet of nonviolence. And they got caught up in the Revolutionary War. Some of them actually went off and fought on the British side. Some others fought on the American side. But most of them remained true to their beliefs of nonviolence. And they got caught in the middle of this. And it's a wonderful story to learn about how they dealt with that very turbulent part of our history. I'm told that as many as 30,000 Quakers left the state of North Carolina as a result of that and as a result of the Civil War, which really sort of leads me into the other show that they do, which is called Pathway to Freedom. Well, let me back up. I think I misspoke. I said that The Sword of Peace was written by Mark Sumner. It was written by William Hardy. Sorry, that's a mistake. The Pathway to Freedom was written by Mark Sumner, and that play takes place just prior to the American Civil War. Also dramatizes events in the lives of those Quakers who their descendants still live in the snow camp area. Those Quakers then, prior to the Civil War, were very much against slavery. And so they bought up slaves. They would purchase slaves in order to get them out of slavery and then put them into this conduit that we now refer to as the Underground Railroad, and sent them up north from one Quaker family to the next, primarily moving at night and following the North Star, to get up across the Ohio River and then eventually up into Canada. Very interesting part of our state's history.
And we'll mention this, but we need to move on and get to the coast. There is also one in Raleigh known as the Amistad Saga Reflections, so that's also something you want to keep in mind. We only have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to make sure we made it all the way through the state, and I think we have. We've talked about the Lost Colony in Matineo. There's also two other performances that are on the coast, Worthy is the Lamb in Swansboro and the Cape Fear Shakespeare folks in Wilmington. Tell us a little bit about those coastal attractions.
Well, Worthy is the Lamb is the only religious drama that we have in North Carolina. It's referred to as a passion play, and it dramatizes events in the life of Jesus Christ. It's usually the last 7 days of his life. The theater is located in a beautiful place right along the White Oak River, just outside of Swansboro, North Carolina. Overlooks that beautiful site. They even have what we call in our business a water stage. It sort of looks like a moat that goes around half of the theater, and they have boats that come in and out of the moat that sail, an awful lot of special effects. It's a very grand production there. Their production qualities are quite strong. Cape Fear Shakespeare Festival is in Wilmington, and they produce Shakespearean productions. This year they'll be doing King Lear by William Shakespeare. And they are very lucky in that they're located in a place where there are an awful lot of professional actors who perform in film, moving pictures down there in the film studio. And so those people quite often, when they're waiting to do a film role, are delighted to do Shakespearean roles in the Cape Fear Shakespeare Festival.
We only have about a minute left, but let me ask you, and I'll give you a chance to also let folks know about your website, but let me just ask you if you can say it in 30 seconds or less, what does make for a good outdoor drama?
Well, it's the emotional appeal, and that's true for all of theater, all drama. If it needs to have a strong emotional reaction from the audience. The goal is pretty much the same for indoor theater as well as outdoor drama.
Well, Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama. We've talked a lot about different outdoor drama attractions throughout North Carolina, but folks may want to know more, and you have a website that might be able to help them out.
We do. We have a very large website where you can get a tremendous amount of information and also go right to the websites of other theaters. And it's www.unc.edu/DEPTS/outdoor. Afraid it's kind of long, but you can do a search for outdoor drama and it will take you right there.
Well, fantastic. Well, Scott, we have worked our way all the way through a half hour. Pleasure to visit with you, and I'm sure we're looking forward to another fantastic season throughout the rest of this summer with outdoor drama here in North Carolina. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Scott Parker with the Institute of Outdoor Drama at UNC Chapel Hill, talking about the various dramas all the way from Manio to Cherokee and various stops in between here in North Carolina. This has been another edition of North Carolina Report. It is a public affairs presentation of the North Carolina News Network. I'm Bruce Farrell, thanking you for being with us.
over 50,000 job openings each year. The Navy has 50,000 jobs in 60 different fields, like computers and electronics, engineering and construction, aviation, healthcare, business administration. Best of all, the Navy will pay you a full-time salary while you train. Expert training with practical experience. A good job with full benefits, including 30 days paid vacation each year. And the Navy takes you to exciting places like Hawaii, Europe, the Caribbean, Japan, Australia. Enjoy your time off and enjoy a job that counts where you are a part of an elite fighting team. The best that America has to offer. A team working with cutting-edge technology. And in the Navy, you use what you learn every day with hands-on experience. The Navy offers you adventure, education, and opportunity, including money for college. Are you ready for the challenge? High school seniors or graduates? Find out the facts. Call Navy Recruiting at 1-800-662-7419 for a local interview. That's 1-800-662-7419. Or visit www.navy.com. Navy, accelerate your life.
Miss Marshall doesn't know it, but I hate it when her class is over. That means that school's out, and all my friends want to do is hang out and do nothing. You ask them, what are you doing? Nothing. What are you gonna do? Nothing. And what's the fun in that? Nothing.
I mean, it's not like we get a chance to play some games, or learn something new about computers or music, or even have someone figure out some cool stuff for us to do. You know, it'd be nice to tell my mom I did something after school.
You might not know this, but as many as 15 million children are left with nothing to do after school. Give them something rewarding. After school programs offer the creative and educational experience a child needs to grow. Call 1-800-USA-LEARN if you would like an after school program in your community. Help children to help themselves. Call 1-800-872-5327. A message from the After School Alliance and the Ad Council.
These are news and public affairs programs from NCNN.
This is Radio Health Journal, a weekly news magazine with the latest in health, medicine, and technology. A closer look at the issues that affect your health and well-being.
Shows that nearly a third of American women over age 18 are affected by stress urinary incontinence. Yet embarrassment and misconceptions leave most suffering in silence. Nancy Muller, Executive Director of the National Association for Continence.
We know that most women won't bring up their condition with their doctor because they're too ashamed, or they believe it's just a part of getting older, and they simply accept it. They need to know it's not a normal part of aging and that urine leakage at any age is not acceptable.
Nancy Muller says women who are ignorant of their options often avoid getting help. Women need to take the initiative to get educated, seek preventive steps, and explore new advances. For more information on stress urinary incontinence, call 1-800-BLADDER, 1-800-252-3337, or visit the National Association for Continence at www.nafc.org.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. I'm Shel Lustig. This program is a production of MediaTrax Communications. If you'd like a cassette copy of today's show, call area code 847-299-9500. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.